Hey everyone, welcome back to the High Tea Hoops podcast. This is Brian Beauchesne at the Duke of Hoops. And after a break, where I've been very busy playing in the National Basketball League for the Westminster Warriors, so excited after covering British basketball for the last 2 years or so to actually be playing in the NBL, but it is a lot of work, so I took a little break. But I'm back now, excited to do more podcasts, especially as the BBL and NBA seasons go into their final stretches here. But today's episode is all about athlete branding. It's with Megan Reyes, a social media and athlete branding consultant that has worked at a ton of cool places like the Golden State Warriors, NBA 2K, and The Athletic. We chat about what makes a strong brand for an athlete, how athletes can start building their brand pillars, what athletes can do to differentiate themselves, and how brands can better work with athletes. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Megan.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me. Thanks for coming up with a good title for me.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll refine it. You can work on your personal brand. It'll be great. You've worked at so many fun companies. So let's just start there. Do you want to go? You don't have to go over your whole resume. But you know, when I think I started following you, you were at the Athletic, then Blue Wire Pods. You've worked for the Warriors. You're all over the place in terms of companies that I would dream to work for. So do you just want to cover kind of your experiences and your professional background a little bit?
Yes. How can I best condense this without just pulling up my LinkedIn and being like, and on 2009, it started in college. I got a marketing internship when I was a student at my university's athletic department, very mm-hmm. small school, University of Idaho, which many people probably have not heard of or don't know.
I went to Bozeman High School, so I knew a lot of people that went to Idaho. Alex Brecky, track team. Do you have any idea who that is?
We never talk about this. I didn't know you're from Montana.
Yeah. Alex Brecky, okay. Does that ring a bell? He was like the fastest person I ever met.
No.
Vandals? All right, that's okay. That's like, oh my God, that's like 10 years ago now. All right, continue before I realize how old I'm getting.
Yeah, so I started in the athletic department and small school, small program, but you know, the experience, the game day roles are still the same. And I didn't know a career in sports was possible. This was 2009. So there wasn't social media. Yeah. You weren't able to see some of the careers that people had outside of like your standard corporate marketing or HR job. I fell in love with it and I wanted everything and anything to do with it. So from the time I was 18 to now, I've been fortunate to work on the team side, on the media side. I mean, between internships and full-time jobs, I've had the pleasure of working at the Portland Timbers, the Golden State Warriors, Oregon Ducks on the media side. A little adjacent there, I spent some time at 2K. So I got a little bit
I saw that
video game and entertainment. Mm-hmm. So I got a little bit of that and then went to the Athletic, like you said, and Blue Wire. And now I made the crazy and brave choice to be self-employed. So I am very fortunate though, because those experiences were unintentionally well-rounded. I think maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but at that point, a lot of people, if you want to be in sports, you kind of will take any opportunity that's given to you. And early in my career, so long as each transition wasn't lateral, I was going to take it because I believed that that would help me grow. In hindsight, and unintentionally, it did. But you know, I went from ticket sales to ticket services to the nitty-gritty cold calling to partnerships, the social. And so it all sort of grew and snowballed and culminated into a spot where I'm at now, where I feel like I've been able to see so many different facets of the industry that I'm more comfortable kind of going out on my own. So that is my condensed Cliff Notes
version. Yes, that's great. And was the Athletic the first time where you really went into the social side of things and really focused on that area?
Yes. Okay. So before that, it was kind of, again, sort of unintentionally building my own personal social presence. And I had more of an opportunity to get tangible professional hands-on experience in social while at the Athletic. Mm-hmm. When I was there in 2018, still a small, or 2019, still a small company. So you know, lots of different hats. If someone was gone and needed the account managed for a day or two, I jumped in there. So that's when I really got to learn and see from the outside. And then an opportunity came where I got to transition full-time and work with and for my dear friend, Olivia Witherite. And she taught me a lot and I learned a lot. And that's where I got my first like real professional social experience.
And then was Blue Wire more athlete focused? What was kind of your role at Blue Wire?
It was a lot. Again, so it was actually really
startup. It's like fast growing startup stage. Yeah.
Yes, which you know more than anything. And Blue Wire, like when I got to The Athletic at that point, it was more hyper growth.
Yeah.
Systems were in place. It was more just kind of starting to take things from ideation to execution. And my time at Blue Wire was all of it. Like building true the startup. Business.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Like building processes while also trying to ideate and execute. So what was really cool is they brought me on based on that snowball of experience that I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. So I got to kind of touch different projects and areas of the business that made sense, that maybe they needed me or I wanted to work on. So some of that was helping with social. Some of that was, a lot of it was branding. I worked under our head of marketing, and together we were working on a whole brand refresh and strategy, and then trying to take our mission and our values and create smaller campaigns and moments throughout the both sports and the culture calendar that still can funnel up to what Blue Wire's overall brand is. And then I did get to do some really fun calls, prospecting content creators, athletes, influencers, entertainers, really just trying to bring people on and make cool stuff with Blue Wire. So it's so funny because I would make this joke all the time, but depending on who asked me and what day I was asked, my answer at what I did there changed it was
that's most startups. So many different hats.
Yeah.
And so I've done really well in my interview style. If I usually answer my own question while I ask the question, so I'll try not to do that in this one, but athletes, sports, entertainment, it's a really exciting industry. Their brands are becoming more valuable than ever before. So what kind of excited you to pursue opportunities with sports and with athletes? Because you do have a broad experience and you decided to go freelance and kind of focus on the specific area. What excited you about this specific area of brand, sport, athletes?
Particularly when it comes to athlete branding, we, those in the industry, you know, we're not dense to the fact that this has been a untapped potential for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of athletes that have been doing it. And we see a lot more now within, I would even say, I'd argue in the last maybe even year and a half, venturing out and doing their own branding and their own.
Especially,
yeah, you know, I really think the pandemic.
Yeah, it's all got to be virtual. They want to communicate and they can't do it in person.
Exactly. And so we see this happening. We know that NIL is happening. And where I saw an opportunity and a passion for, even just in conversations with friends or people that I've had introductory calls with, they want to get to whatever this endpoint is, point B, where they can make the investments or have the partnerships and start to build this brand. And they don't know how to get there. And we know that this point B, just like any company, we can consider the activation and the sales part of the brand. Where I think it gets overwhelming for a lot of athletes and where I got excited is they have not yet started to even think about just who they are and what they want their brand to be. And so I know even since I mentioned going freelance, I've had some really cool calls or people being like, hey, we help with the actual monetization point. And a lot of our athletes just don't know where to start, but that's because they want to jump to point B and they want to start getting the partnerships and they don't know how, or they're like, companies aren't reaching out and I'm getting overwhelmed. And I understand it. It's because I feel like there's a hole that hopefully I can help fill space in where a lot of people are helping with a monetization standpoint. Yeah. And a lot of athletes, especially maybe not the Patrick Mahomes or the Tom Brady's, don't know what they want their brand to be. And by helping them develop that part, hopefully I can then, the experts in the monetization space can help them from there. So I saw that opportunity. That really excites me because even just beyond sports, that's really just helping people figure out who they are.
Yeah.
And I really like that part.
Yeah. I just had Jesse Chukwu on the last podcast where he went from professional basketball player to now millions of followers on TikTok. He does like all these comedy sketches and everything. He's British. So he does a lot of British in America type jokes. And he talked about like, he'd always been creative, but he felt the stigma of creating content and being himself while he was an athlete. Cause he felt like he would be judged. And that if they lost 3 games in a row, people would be like, why are you doing this, you know, ball wall type content when you need to be focused on the game? And I think you're right, though. He's kind of realized that like, no, I can be a human being outside of being an athlete. And that's important, especially if you want to build your brand. So that segues perfectly into my next question is, what kind of things do you find make a really strong brand for an athlete? And then maybe if there's any athletes that stand out to you that you really appreciate and know that they have a strong brand, as examples of that.
Yeah, you know, I think this also just comes down to humans, you know, kind of outside of sports too, is just that authenticity factor is really, really important. When I even just have initial calls, even with friends, even with non-athletes, even with creators or people that want to grow as a professional, because everybody has a brand and everybody should have a brand. I always just ask people, like, who do you want to be? And what do you want to be known for? Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I always get either laughed at or they get frustrated because it's a deep question.
Yeah.
And this is a whole nother tangent, but years and years of therapy, I've kind of become numb to the fact that sometimes I ask really deep questions because
right away.
Anytime I ask this again to a friend, to athletes, they're like, I don't know. That's what you're supposed to help me with. I'm like, I understand, but who do you as a person want to be known for outside of being an athlete? And then from there we can start. So the authenticity factor, I think, is really important. And I think there's also a level of making sure that each athlete or person, we can insert, you know, again, whoever wants to have their own personal brand, is portraying who they are and who they want to be and not who they think others want them to be. And so authenticity, I think, is really, really important. And because of that, some athletes that really stand out to me with a strong personal brand are people like Naomi Osaka, people like Asia Wilson and Liz Cambage. And honestly, a lot of these women athletes that are have stood for and are vocal about causes that they care about outside of sports, social justice, mental health, other passions, other causes, anything in the community, because that's who they are. That's what makes them authentic. And I kind of see different buckets. There's so many other very good personal brands. I mean, you can look at, again, the Patrick Mahomes and the LeBron James. That's also because they're worth so much money.
Yeah.
And so that's
a billionaire different level. Yeah, you get to the Tom Brady, LeBron,
That's also because they're able to make investments and they're able to really grow their portfolio. So I look at it in different buckets. But when I'm looking at someone's, you know, even on what we would consider a micro level, and we can also go into a whole nother probably conversation as to why women athletes probably are best at personal branding, because they know it's a shorter opportunity to leverage their name and they have to create something for themselves outside of sports, given inequity and pay and all of that. But it's because I know that we can look at Naomi Osaka, Asia Wilson, and Liz Cambage if we want to use those three examples. And we know they care about social justice. They care about mental health. Yeah. Outside, off the court, we know what they stand for. And so those personal brands stand out to me a little bit more when someone asks me, because I know that anything they do, any partnerships that they do will probably be true to some of those really deep-rooted passions.
Yeah. And it's so hard. You're right. Cause I was speaking to a friend who is playing college basketball and he was trying to take advantage of name, image, likeness. And it's like, so what do you enjoy doing like outside of the sport? And you know, this is an 18-year-old. So it's like, I like going to the lake. You're right. A lot of these athletes haven't really thought about it to that level. And totally agree. Therapy really helps you learn how to communicate about yourself. So if you haven't, try therapy. It's extremely helpful in communication. What kind of things do you ask these athletes, or how do you get them to actually figure out what they like to do outside of their sport or who they are outside of their sport? Are there things you found, tricks, tips on bringing that out of them?
It's the experience of therapy, the probing questions, the almost just kind of pushing them on it. And again, this comes to, which I'm very fortunate, or I'm very glad to see the shift in how companies, universities, individuals are viewing the importance of athlete branding, but they've just never been asked this question, probably even from youth level, collegiate level, before going professional.
A lot of coaches are not asking this question.
They're not asking this question.
It's not happening on the court or on the field.
And, you know, a lot of times too, if they get asked and they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. And a lot of people are like, okay, I'm not going to push you on it. But it's really just, I have yet to find a perfect trick, but it's just really respectfully probing. I kind of have learned, which again, I guess I've subtly picked up in therapy because my therapist does it to me. I kind of learned those roundabout ways, like, okay, you know, you don't know what you want to be known for. Like, do you have hobbies?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, really like photography. Oh, okay. You really like hanging out with your family. So you'd consider yourself family oriented and artistic. Really cool. Would you want to be a photographer after, you know, you retire? What are things you like to shoot? Oh, so yeah. You really care about nature. So I've kind of learned to ask those probing questions where I feel like they get frustrated with me because they know they're in a therapy session and they're being forced to look in the mirror. But oftentimes they start to realize, okay, yeah, I guess I do like that. I guess I do have interests outside of sports. Maybe I do have a brand. I've just never really thought about it that way. But I really just start to ask. And maybe even before I come straight into the, what do you want to be known for? Like the, tell me about yourself. Cause I try and just mentally take notes and see if they align later when I ask that question.
Yeah.
Cause oftentimes it probably does. They just aren't realizing that those are their passions and values that they could probably create a brand from.
And I know you said stay very authentic, but do you ever go first of like, what brands do you really like and what's their audience like? Is that the wrong way to go about it? Like, I love, you know, maybe it's a fishing outfitter or maybe it's Patagonia. I want to land a deal with them. What's their audience like? How can I fit within their audience the right way? Is that the wrong way to go about it? Or does that kind of maybe help them develop who they are, kind of what their interests are?
It's a good question. I don't think it's a wrong way to go about it. I think it's a good supplementary question. I'm trying to think, probably if I was having a call with someone, I would probably ask that a little bit later.
Yeah.
So that they don't start to formulate their answers around.
Yeah. Based on the target audience of whatever.
Yeah. Based around the company they want to work with and trying to appeal to that target audience. So I think I try and get them to think about themselves first to remain that authenticity and then ask, you know, what are some ideal partners? What are some ideal brands? Who are other people you find inspiring to start to put the pieces together without ever falling short-sighted on who they are and not who they want, who they think others want them to be.
Who their like character needs to be maybe to fit that brand or something.
Yeah. Because that's not sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get burned out. You know, if you have to create content around that all the time and it's not you, then it's an awful experience.
Yeah.
So let's say you figured out what their pillars are, what their, you know, their pillars of personality or whatever branding terms you want to use for.
Pillars.
Yeah. So let's say you figured out their pillars. How do you start to kind of conceptualize that brand or start to build that plan with them? What does that process look like for athletes to start kind of creating around those brand pillars?
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe this is certainly apples to oranges because I am not a professional athlete, but like I'll use my personal experience as an example because I can confidently point to that. And then if people want to draw parallels, please, so be it. But, you know, mental health, which I've actually been wearing a shirt about, is something that I care so passionately about, and I would consider it a pillar. Mm-hmm. And kind of going back to holding that thought, going back to that, that's exactly what I have them do is I literally ask them, you know, every brand, every person should have pillars. What do you want yours to be? So that is the buzz term I use.
Yeah.
And I would consider mental health one of mine. And so I started to think similarly, what content can I create? Like, I'm not a licensed therapist. I don't want to act like I know what I'm talking about from my own experiences, what content can I create? And for me, it was a podcast. Mm-hmm. It was short form content as far as reels and TikToks around things that I have learned. And I was able to create that space. So if a person or an athlete has a passion that they really care about and they have platforms and there's maybe a hole in that channel, for example, it's quite easy. I'm sure I could easily land on mental health TikTok, but maybe someone that's talking about it in the sports landscape, I can probably think off the top of my head a few. So if there's an opportunity and maybe they already have a large TikTok following or have yet to create one, we know what growth is like on TikTok. It's unreal. There's an opportunity there for them to fill that void and create content. So I think it really just depends on the pillar and it depends on the cross-channel following they have, where they maybe feel the most comfortable. Because again, it's all about authenticity. Some people, they were really bullish on TikTok, but they knew that there's a good opportunity because again, as we know, anyone can become an overnight sensation. So long as they are comfortable actually creating that content, I think there's so many different areas. And again, it's not just social. There's other digital platforms. If someone wants to become a writer, you know, start writing content, publishing it. I actually had on my podcast a college women's basketball player who loves writing, and we talked about it, and she loves writing. And while this wasn't a branding conversation, it was this interview style similar to this. I learned a lot about her, and I asked her, what made you want to start writing? A lot of it was a therapeutic form for her. And I asked her, what made you want to put it on the internet? And it was because she wanted to share her story. But if I were to then take that conversation and want to work with her on her brand, it's like, okay, you really enjoy writing. You have it on the internet. That's a form. That's a way for you to create content. If you wanted to become a writer or anything in that space, you have that platform now and you can go with it. So the point saying is that there's more to than just social, you know, dancing on TikTok or doing the things. You can create podcasts, you can create shows, people that want to be on camera, anybody, for better or for worse, anybody can get a mic and a green screen and start making YouTube content, whatever it may be. There's so many different opportunities. It's getting creative, it's being authentic, and it's really using the platforms that they have in the moment.
Do you find it helpful to actually have like a content plan that you put together for an athlete, or is that overkill for a lot of them? So it's not as authentic. Like if we get into the weeds, how much do you like structure? Hey, you know, you got to go, your channels are Instagram, TikTok, and you know, you're going to have a podcast. You need to do this many a week, this many a day. Do you get that granular with them? Do they respond well to that?
I like to have it loosely in place. Okay. The only reason being is in my experience, they get really overwhelmed.
Yeah. Given they have so many other things to manage too.
Given practice, training, games, travel, I found some have like a fear of committing to some of these projects, not knowing whether they'll burn out, if their schedule will allow, you know, they're putting their name out there. So they don't want to commit to something. And then if they have to pull back or people start to wonder what happened to this person's TikTok series or what happened to this person's YouTube series. So I like to have it in place just as goals, you know, this is what we should be targeting, or this in my mind, trying to guide them gently towards like, hey, we should do a TikTok this week, or we should do a, you know, you should do a post this week, without forcing it on them, because I think it becomes overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine. I get overwhelmed. And again, I'm not a professional athlete and I don't have the schedule they do. So I personally don't like to put those guardrails up, because I feel like then it becomes not as exciting for them anymore.
Yeah. It can really hurt your confidence when you start like a bubble or wobble series and you're behind the scenes and then you don't make another TikTok for, you know, months and months, and people are like, where are you? It can be kind of, you know, it kind of hurts your ego a little bit, or you're like, oh, I've waited too long to do the next one. It can kind of stop you. So yeah, it's hard to be an athlete managing that, especially when there might be expectations for you and you don't want to start a road to the championship if you lose, or, you know, that's maybe focusing on the wrong thing. So does emphasizing the goals help? I guess like what becomes the North Star for them to stick to that type of schedule? Is it the brand deals? Is it kind of landing thing opportunities outside of the sport that helps? What should athletes focus on to maybe get them through those more difficult times of producing content at that scale?
Yeah, I think it's whatever their end goal is, whether it's a brand deal, monetization, whether it's just establishing who they are for that post-playing career. Mm-hmm. Some might be more qualitative, some might be more quantitative. I think just keeping that in mind as that North Star will help, because for example, if somebody wants to become a broadcaster after their post-playing career, it's a little more tricky to measure that success as it would with like, okay, we've closed 3 brand deals this quarter. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can see the growth as far as like podcast appearances or maybe creating their own content and just knowing people are watching, don't think people are watching. Maybe we can't point to like, we did X brand deals and you brought in X amount of dollars, but know that people are watching and start making those connections so that when the time comes, you have already established yourself as someone that can be on both sides of the mic and somebody that is comfortable talking about the sport or whatever the off the field passion may be. So that's where it gets a little bit tricky. But if they can always keep that goal in the back of their mind and know that maybe, because again, I know athletes are competitive. I know they want to see results. That's what drives them inherently by nature. So it can be very discouraging probably not to see some of that results out there in the world. But I think what a lot need to know is people are paying attention.
Yeah.
And maybe quietly, I, again, a different experience, have seen that where I've gotten messages even since I went freelance where people are like, it's so cool. Like, I've been watching in the curtains, you know, in the wings this whole time. Yeah. And it's so cool to see what you've done. I didn't know. And that I could have and have been discouraged along the way. So it's important for athletes to know that people are definitely paying attention. And when a time comes for maybe whether it's a brand deal, or I like to really, part of the reason I wanted to get into this was to help them succeed for post-playing. Yeah. But to know that sometimes people are just waiting for that moment. And maybe when that retirement announcement comes, it's like, let's go.
Yeah,
let's go get that person. Yeah, it's time. And so again, you may not be seeing those results now, but people are definitely paying attention.
Yeah. Setting yourself up for it. Yeah, you see it with like the Richard Jefferson road trip and pod, and you see what Draymond's doing now. Like, you're like, oh, there, that's the path to being a broadcaster. You can see what they're doing.
Oh, Draymond's going to be on TNT the moment he retires.
He's going to be so good. And we have a question, first audience question, from Abby Lowe, who's a professional basketball player in the UK.
Okay.
They're in the WBBL. Incredible TikTok, by the way. She is putting in work. Okay. She's all over TikTok on every trend. She's an incredible content creator. And her question is, how do we make our posts reach the right target audience? So she's putting out all this content. I'm sure she's wondering, how do I actually get this in front of the right people?
Is she talking about on TikTok?
I think
if we're talking on TikTok,
that's a hard question. TikTok's hard.
Yeah, we all know. I was going to say, I don't even think TikTok knows how to crack that algorithm.
I know. You're like, oh, I just went viral in Indonesia, or I just went viral in Saudi Arabia. Great. I'm glad they're paying attention to this photo tip.
I mean, I just laughed because like my most viral quote unquote TikTok was like something about me being Filipino. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, I'm trying to build.
It's hard to control. Build,
yeah, I'm trying to talk about sports and branding, and you wanted to take this TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
these are very hard questions.
That is a hard question.
I'm off the cuff. Let's just give her a good response.
That is a tough question because as we know, there's a lot of nuance to it. It's knowing the audience. So if her audience is, how old is she?
Probably early 20s.
Okay. So if her audience is like millennial to Gen Z, we know what channels they live on, likely TikTok, maybe a little less Instagram. Maybe it is Snapchat, which I still can't really wrap my brain around that. So many people still use Snapchat, but there is, you know, Snapchat subscription. So it's really just knowing, like looking at some of that high level data, knowing who that target demo is and any potential gender and putting it in front of the right channels. Because if, let's say her audience is Gen Z, but she's trying to get the content in front of people on Twitter, I don't know if that's where their audience lives. Probably not. And then there's also the nuance of what channels people use in different countries versus, you know, what I know here in the States. So
like
it's
Facebook
really just
is huge here. Did you know that? Yeah. They love Facebook here. Facebook, not Instagram. Facebook is huge. And I'm still wrapping my brain around it.
I did not know that. See, these are nuances that I don't know. And so while a lot of us here probably use Facebook in the States for like the business manager aspect and having the page and maintaining some presence for what a lot of us would agree is like the older demographic.
Yeah.
If that's huge over there, then you should be putting the content on Facebook. So it's really just knowing your audience. And I would also say taking even just the business lens off of it, I would assume she is her own target demo. As a consumer, where would you want to see your content?
Yeah.
As a consumer, what content would you want to see? How often would you want to see it? What would you care about? Mm-hmm. Remove yourself, consider yourself the target demo. If you're not watching content on Instagram, maybe it's not supposed to go there.
Yeah. That's a great off the cuff response. I think the first one is like, yeah, who is it? What channels do they live on? And then really kind of experiment with the types of content that they might want to see. That's a great answer.
I feel like I'm in like a business class getting quizzed. It's like,
how do you target your right customer? Great question, Abby. Thank you for the question. Okay. This is kind of going along the authenticity and uniqueness, but there's a lot of athletes that try their hands at like ventures outside of the sport, the sneaker deals, you know, with you at 2K, a lot of them are streaming, they're creating wine labels, clothing merch. So kind of once they define their brand pillars, which could be more generic, you know, it could be, you know, mental health, basketball, I stream 2K and then I love, you know, whatever the, you know, this brand, this particular type of fashion. How do they make themselves unique? Like what things do you pull out of those pillars, or how can an athlete understand what makes me unique and distinguishable versus everyone else who might also like video games and basketball?
Yeah, I think to your point, it does come to that authenticity, the personality, the voice and tone. You can have one person, like we can have three athletes in front of us, unnamed. I can't think of one off the top of my head that you said. Maybe they all get on Twitch. They all stream themselves playing video games and they're drinking a glass of wine. Why would I watch person A stream over B over C? It comes to the authenticity. It comes to the personality, the tone. Is it someone you just want to like hang out with? Again, if we're using the example of Twitch, if I'm going to sit here and watch your stream, I should feel like I'm hanging out with you and I want to hang out with you. And I like your personality and you're someone I would align with, someone I'd want in my circle, would help that person stand out more than
putting on a character
who hasn't quite yet figured out their tone and their voice and who they are. And I think sometimes too, we can maybe subconsciously get a feel for some of these brand partnerships that don't seem as authentic.
Yeah.
And that maybe are just a true monetization, like exchange of money, shake hands. Yes. Cause that authenticity, you just kind of, it's there, you notice it or you don't notice it. Mm-hmm. And so if you can tell that the person really has figured out their personality, their tone, it makes sense, that will always stand out to me. And I'll always come back to that. I mean, we use the example, you kind of mentioned it earlier. It's a different, it's kind of going on a tangent, but Juju is who Juju is. Mm-hmm. It's who he will always be. People will love him and hate him for his TikToks. He does not care. He shouldn't care because he set himself up for success well after he stops playing football. Yeah. But his personality just keeps, you know, people coming back. And you know who else has a wonderful personality that I love on their social content? Alfonso Davies. I'm obsessed with him. He has the best personality. He always makes me laugh. So if a soccer player or a football player wanted to, you know, he cares about video games.
Yeah.
Soccer, if he's streaming FIFA versus maybe a different person, you know, same on paper qualities and qualifications. I know that Alfonso Davies has like a hilarious personality. I would sit and watch his stream.
Yeah.
Because he's just being who he is.
Yeah. I'm going to switch gears to more of the brand side, but there's a lot of soul searching that needs to happen with personal branding. I think that's why it's so hard. Like it's so much about being authentic, knowing yourself, kind of diving into yourself, which is really hard. That's why this is not an easy thing.
No, it is really difficult. And so that's why when people get discouraged, like don't get discouraged, because it's not something, it's deep rooted. It's really asking someone, who are you? And that is a difficult question.
And I found even like starting this process of becoming a content creator, you're starting to post more about yourself, you kind of figure out who you are as you do that. You know, you'll post some things and you're like, oh, that's not really what I want to do. Or like, I'm going to post these things. Oh, that felt right. So you can almost kind of figure it out as you go too. You don't need to have it all
trial and error
before you start. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really, really good point. I've actually have spoken about that also in some other like presentations of it's trial and error. You don't know. You might think like my audience really cares about this. You can put out a post or a piece of content and it doesn't land. And sometimes that's disappointing because you're like, dang, I thought that was
I
really
loved
good.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. But now you
Olivia
know.
Just did
and that's
that.
Okay.
Olivia just did that trend on TikTok, which I love. Is like, why do you keep making TikToks if no one watches them? And it's like, I watch them. I like them. Yeah.
I saw that one. Yeah. Like you didn't know. And if the purpose is like, cause I know Olivia just does it for fun.
Yeah.
That's for her purpose. She's not trying to get in front of anybody or, you know, grow a massive TikTok audience. But if you are, and maybe sometimes a post or a piece of content or a campaign, maybe not hits your expectations. That's okay. It's trial and error. Now you know.
Yeah. Olivia, two shout outs on the spot, by the way.
She's
currently in the
lead. I'm going to have to text her after.
All right. So if we switch to more of the brand side, what have you found are some best practices for brands to work with athletes? And that can be open-ended, contacting them, working with them. I know you're mostly focusing on kind of building the athletes side of it, but what have you found brands have done really well when they work with athletes?
The really natural, organic integration. You know, this is really off. I'm going to go a roundabout way. Do you follow? We're on a whole TikTok. TikTok thing here. Do you follow Corporate Natalie on TikTok?
Yes.
I feel like everybody follows Corporate Natalie. Yes. Her most recent piece of content was her Dell partnership. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw, it's like her bringing her laptop everywhere because like we work from home and nobody can unplug. It took me almost to the end of the TikTok to realize it was a branded piece of content.
Yeah.
Because it literally is just the type of TikTok she would create. It was funny. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even paying attention to the computer until actually I went to the comments and somebody was like, that was the most natural brand partnership I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then I read her caption and was like, oh my God, that was a Dell partnership. Mm-hmm. So I think where brands can best work with athletes is really, really allow them to create content that is so authentic and organic to them and to not as much as possible, because I know it can be difficult, especially with some certain larger brands, to not control the copy and the messaging and the tone too much, mm-hmm. because that's where it really comes across as like just a monetization play.
That's where you get like the sellout comments, like, ah, oh, don't sell out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just like my top of mind general thought is like really just allowing the creator, whether it is an athlete, just the creator to be really, really true to them. I loved that partnership because again, it was just so on brand for Natalie and I didn't even notice the partnership. It was so subtle.
That's a great example. And that's such good advice too. Cause you'll see just like normal post. And then they'll be like, here's the makeup I use. And it's just like an overhead shot of makeup or it's an overhead shot of ties or whatever the partnership is. And you're like, oh, like this isn't your type of content. Why am I just getting an ad now?
Yeah. So
that's good advice.
And I've been in just even professional experiences where we try and then the brand will come back and just completely change the copy for so many different reasons, especially with the really, really large corporations. You get it. You can't really control that. But then they're like, okay, well, now it's a little less authentic and organic, but
yeah. Well, that is perfect.
You know how that goes.
Yeah. That's a perfect segue into Christine Kupo's amazing questions. Another audience question here. I'll just ask you one because she had three great ones. We don't have enough time to fully cover all of them. But with that note of allowing the creators to be authentic, how have you been able to cultivate and differentiate, or how have you been able to cultivate all of these differentiated voices of these creators that represent the overarching brand? So allowing the creator to be themselves while still having them all aligned to maybe a specific campaign theme or a brand theme.
Yeah. So I can like use an example at Blue Wire. So again, overarching brand messaging is inclusion, diversity, you know, really trying to do something outside of sports media, something outside of what traditional sports media are doing, especially when it comes to underrepresented communities and voices. So any of these cultural or sports moment campaigns we were doing, whether it was, you know, Women's History Month or Pride or even just tentpole sports moments, you know, as we all know, when we were creating these campaigns, a lot of it, because our main communication tools are social, again, a push and pull, because we're trying to grow while also trying to create content. Another TED talk on how that can be difficult, but making sure that if we are a company that stands for amplifying underrepresented voices, let's make sure that within our whole pool of creators and talent that we are representing each community and that we can get as much representation as possible so that everything is organic. There, you know, what we would not want to do is put out a campaign and say that we are a company that represents and creates a safe space for people to be who they are, regardless of race, gender, ethnicity, you know, sexual orientation, and then have a campaign that speaks completely opposite to that. Yeah. We see that all the time. all the time, even outside of sports. So a lot of it is just having that lens, and that really intentional lens is what I really try and do. And why would a company, how do I best say this? Basically, like, the individual, the creator, what they care about is what the company should care about. So making sure that we have those voices included in the campaign and part of the creation process is something that I always, always, always try and push for.
Yeah.
Because we can act and pretend like we know what our target audience wants, but unless we give that individual the space and the voice to be a part of the campaign and tell us what is important to them and their target audience, like, it's at that point, it would only be a one-way communication tool. So the point being is I try and cultivate all these differentiated voices by including them in the first place and by having that really intentional lens of making sure, like, do we have good representation?
Well, if it's like a really authentic partnership and they're the right creator for the campaign or for the brand, then they'll kind of help you. They might know it better than you do, you know?
So yeah,
including them early on can really help, and not just mandating this is what you will present or this is the message you need to get across.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good feedback. Exactly. Okay, last question here, another audience question. You've come up with a ton of great examples already, but I'm going to ask for one more, or Max's.
Oh boy.
This is Max Simpson. Throughout your career with all of your different perspectives and experiences, what has been your favorite part about how athlete personality is expressed?
I've
interpreted this a couple ways in my head. It's like the favorite way they've done it, like maybe favorite channels, favorite ways. How are you interpreting that from Max?
I don't know. Wait, what are the different ways
you interpret it? Throughout your career, this is a great one, Max. Throughout your career, all of your different perspective experiences, what has been your favorite part about how athletes express their personality, or how athlete personality is expressed? Is it Juju jumping on a Fortnite stream with Ninja? Is it, you know, doing a charity golf tournament? Is it launching a clothing line? Because they can go so many different directions and get so creative. What are some of your favorite ways they've expressed their personality? I think that's what he's getting at.
I think that's how I interpret it also. But I'm going to answer in two ways.
Okay.
My favorite part is even just seeing that athletes are starting to express their personality. Because kind of like what you mentioned earlier at the top, a lot of people that maybe don't understand the content creation space, the industry that we work in, really feel it's that, I really hate to say, but it's that stick to sports audience that are like, you shouldn't be doing this. You lost. Juju, why are you dancing on the court? Why are you dancing in the locker room? Like, you just lost a playoff game. So to see them even express their personality with no regrets, without fear of what people think, I love, honestly, to even begin in the first place.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are afraid to. And a lot of people, just like employees, they're kind of afraid to be an extension of the team they work for. I get it. Millions of dollars on the line. They don't want to cost themselves their job and their paycheck, maybe because of a piece of content that they thought was good. Yeah. So even just seeing them step out and take that bravery to express who they are, because for so long, the norm was that you just don't do that. You show up and you play your sport and you go home and you don't dance on TikTok or ruffle feathers.
Athlete robots. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the robots that we still see a lot of people argue all the time, but to even see them express their personality is my favorite part in my experiences. And in my years of doing this, that has evolved so much and we're seeing so much more of it. So yeah, maybe it is Juju dancing on logos. I think it's kind of cool because now he has created a brand, and there was so much discourse around that. And I jumped in on it last year of, who cares? You like, okay, he lost a playoff game. He has so many brand partnerships coming in from said TikToks. He really doesn't care. Yes, he doesn't want to be an embarrassment to his organization, but to see people really start to just own their narrative is my favorite part. And also with that, another answer came to mind: to see athletes use their own personal channels to announce their own news.
Yeah.
Like what Richard Sherman did, using his own podcast to announce where he was signing, rather than allowing other people to tell that story or own that narrative. Or, you know, we saw with JJ Watt last year. I think that is incredible and it's smart. And it's so much more impactful than, I don't know, a media outlet with a breaking news tweet.
That's a great answer. All right. That's all the time we have. Let's get some plugs. Where can people find you? Where should they contact you?
Twitter, Instagram. Listen, I'm on my phone all day. We know this. At Meg Reyes _. My website is also linked on my social. And so there is a contact form if people want to reach out with professional business inquiries. So I'm always checking. I may not always be the best at replying, but that doesn't mean I didn't see it. I'm getting back to it, but definitely connect. This was fun. Thanks
for
having me.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, this is great. I got to nerd out on Corporate Natalie. Olivia got some shout outs. Was not expecting that, but very much enjoyed it.
Corporate Natalie, follow me if you hear this.
maybe. We'll see. All right. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.